Pittsburgh, this is Eric Harrison coming to you with a heart full of gratitude on WRCT Pittsburgh. Rock on, Yinzers.
I'm probably okay to have one more drink before I drive home. I'm probably okay. I open the window to stay alert. Probably okay. I just popped some gum in my mouth.
Step out of the car, please.
I probably made a mistake.
Probably okay isn't okay when it comes to drinking and driving. If you see a warning sign, stop and call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Put your hands together and welcome to the stage, Lindisfarne!
I'm Ella Harp, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Well, big shocker, guys, the number of assault rifles being purchased since the recent shootings in Texas and in Buffalo and in Tulsa and all the other places, the number of assault rifles being purchased is exploding. And it is a veritable domestic arms race that is being faced here. And this should come as no surprise to anyone who's been watching this show, listening to the podcast for a while. This is what happens when there are shootings. And this is what happens when there are not shootings. I'll explain in a moment. Let's go to video from a gun shop in Georgia where the owner says assault rifle sales are off the charts, and it's thanks to Biden. Take a listen to this.
The way this president's driving this country, everybody needs to be caring at this point. Mm.
At a firearms superstore in Smyrna, sales are up 30% since last week. Assault rifle sales have tripled, says Eric Wallace.
And especially first thing this morning, a lot of folks were waiting at the door to purchase AR-15s.
AR-15 bans have dominated discussions about gun sale restrictions in light of their use in recent mass shootings across the country. Yet the assault rifle's deadly qualities are also what draws gun enthusiasts seeking a self-defense tool.
Right.
If you're dealing with a mob of people that are trying to possibly take over your home, you're going to need, and to protect your family, you're going to want as much firepower as you can get. So I think it'd be a great choice.
But why get an AR-15?
Well, it's America's rifle.
Trevor Ganey walked out of the store with a new AR-15.
This is a good choice. You know, it's what Americans choose to defend their homes with, you know.
So you're buying it for home defense?
Not really. It's more of a collector's item.
Imagine that. Imagine that with anything else. Oh, wow, that's a nice knife. Why this one? Well, it's the best knife for cutting. Oh, so you're going to buy it for cutting things? No. It's just a collectible. I don't actually plan to use it. Wait, what? Huh? What are you talking about?
Some buyers say there is room for greater government control over the sales of firearms.
I think we do have to have more stringent laws when it comes to keeping guns out of the hands of the mentally ill.
This is crazy what's going on right now.
But others view compromise on gun laws as dangerous.
If we give up our Second Amendment rights, we might as well just put the handcuffs on everybody.
Right. It's like being in jail. If you can't have any gun you want at any time with no oversight, it's like being in a prison. Now, this shouldn't surprise us. I've said a million times, more shootings generate gun sales in the following way. There's basically three scenarios, okay? You've got more shootings that make national news and a Democratic president. Well, you'd better go out and get those guns because it's really dangerous out there and the Democratic president is coming for your guns. They never end up coming for the guns, but that's the story. So you've got shootings and a Democratic president, increases in gun sales. If you've got shootings and a Republican president, then the Republican president will openly say people should be defending themselves. It's dangerous out there. So more shootings and a Republican president also generate more gun sales. And on the off chance that we have a decrease in shootings or a temporary lull, although that's not very common in the United States. I mean, we just have shootings all the time. But if we did, even on a localized level, then in come the gun lobbies and they go, this is thanks to people having guns. It is safer now because people have guns. So if you like that there are fewer shootings, if that would ever happen, you'd better go and get yourself guns because the more guns you have, the safer you will be. So it doesn't happen. It doesn't matter what happens in the real world. In all three scenarios, more guns is what the gun lobby pushes and the gun dealers and the gun manufacturers, no matter what they justified. And this is what we call, you come to your conclusion first, and then you find a different way to justify it. We want more guns. We can either justify it by saying more guns have caused shootings to decline, so keep getting them, or you need guns because it's dangerous out there, as evidenced by all these shootings. Either way, the solution is more guns. Asked on Fox News why gun deaths in the United States are so much higher than in comparable countries, Congressman Steve Scalise blamed the defund the police movement. And unfortunately, the Fox News host in question, John Roberts, didn't even attempt to push back. So there's a lot behind this. And we've been talking about the senseless, I mean, just bizarre justifications and explanations that Republicans and the pro-gun right have given for why we have mass shootings in the U.S. and you don't see them in other countries. They've talked about COVID, even though every country had COVID, video games, doors. They haven't gotten to Windows yet, but maybe they will. But this is a good question. Why is this a problem here and almost nowhere else, at least in terms of Western countries? Here is Steve Scalise's attempt at explaining it.
Let me move ahead to what's going on in this country, because in terms of the developed world, the United States far and away leads every other nation in the developed world.
True.
In terms of gun violence.
Hey, and good for Fox. They put up a chart showing how insanely higher the rate of gun violence deaths is in the U.S. than in any other country. Good for Fox for at least doing that.
Look at this graph. The U.S. way out in front with 4 deaths per 100,000 people. The next closest nation is Cyprus, way behind at just below 0.7 deaths per 100 people. What do you think is responsible for that discrepancy?
Well, in a lot of those countries, first of all, I mean, you look at America. In the last couple of years, you've seen this crazy defund the police movement, but you've also seen a movement that's been going on for a few years in big cities where the DAs aren't even prosecuting criminals until it is a shooting or a violent crime. And
What is this guy talking about? First of all, defund the police is a slogan. Almost no departments have substantially defunded anything. Some have reallocated funds, some have increased funding to police. But I'll think about another thing. The police departments in many of those other countries on the list are already more like the police departments that the reform the police movement wants anyway. So think about that. They're saying the defund the police movement is responsible. It's a slogan that's accomplished almost nothing. But if it did, all it would do is make police departments look more like the police departments in Italy. In France, in other places where not necessarily all officers have firearms, or you don't necessarily have an armed response to every 911 call. But the idea that there are mass shootings. The mass shooters who they say are mentally ill are deciding whether to go and do shootings based on what DAs are doing. Like, it's completely incoherent.
Letting criminals back out on the streets, and inevitably what you see is higher rates of crime. And
yeah, it's completely absurd. These mass shootings were not criminals that had been let back out on the street.
What you're also seeing is more and more American citizens, law-abiding citizens, are buying guns to defend themselves.
But the question was, why do we have so many shootings? And he's saying, well, all these citizens are buying guns to defend themselves. He's not trying to make that point, but he's almost inadvertently making it. More guns makes it more dangerous.
It's happening in every demographic group you can imagine, where you have large increases in people buying guns, because if they can't have faith that their local police department that's been defunded can arrive quickly.
All right. This guy's disgusting. As you know, barely any defunding has taken place. And it's a slogan. And blaming the epidemic of gun violence on a slogan that, first of all, is very new. Defund the police as a widespread slogan, which, by the way, almost no one on the left supports. I mean, quite literally, almost no one. You do polling. Most of the left wants to reform the police. They don't want to defund it. That's what you're blaming it on. And what about all the mass shootings that have taken place before that became a slogan? Now, I tweeted something similar. How do they explain it? I tweeted, quote, "It would be interesting to figure out why a country like Italy, for example, has essentially no mass shootings. They have economic problems. They have diversity." You know, sometimes the right likes to say, well, homogeneous countries have less violence, like countries like, you know, they often point to Norway or whatever. Italy is a diverse country. But they have almost no mass shootings. What could be the reason? And the great Betsy Brandt, who played Marie on Breaking Bad, responded, "No one knows." Of course, tongue in cheek, the guns are the difference. And people jokingly responded and said, well, Italy has fresh pasta. Italy doesn't have doors. Of course, that's a joke. But in all seriousness, Italy has doors and they have video games and they had COVID mandates. They have everything other than as many guns as we have per capita. And they don't have toxic American gun culture. It's both things. So any sensible person can see it's pointing very strongly to the guns. Deal with everything else, sure, but you've got to deal with the guns as well. Now, in addition, the pointing fingers at the defund the police movement, you know, the Uvalde, Texas PD department, PD police department was well funded. And in fact, the police department there had 40% of the city's budget. So think about that. 40% of the budget in Uvalde is police. They have everything they need to go in and stop a shooter. And they stood outside for an hour. So at least as far as that's concerned, defund the police a non-factor. And Steve Scalise is doing what they all do, just running interference. That's all they want to do. They're not going to stop. They don't want to deal with guns in any serious way. And this is what you get. By the way, 4, 5, 6 mass shootings over the weekend. I mean, we can't even keep track at this point. They didn't all make national news. Every day could just be the mass shooting show where I just talk about all. We would need multiple hours a day to fully cover every mass shooting in the United States. Hey, this is absolutely unbelievable. Secret Service was warned on the eve of January 6, 2021, that there would be a risk to Mike Pence caused by Donald Trump and his inciting on January 5th and January 6th. This is truly incredible. The Secret Service assigned to Mike Pence warned Pence might be a target because of Trump. Article on Axios. Mark Short, the then chief of staff to former Vice President Mike Pence, warned the Secret Service on January 5 of a security threat to Pence, per the New York Times. The day before the Capitol riot, Short warned his top Secret Service agent, Tim Giebels, that former President Trump may turn against Pence and there could be a security risk to Pence because of it. A source with direct knowledge confirmed to Axios the report was accurate. So both Axios and New York Times independently able to confirm this. Short did not have knowledge of the specifics of the security threat, and it's not clear what steps, if any, Giebels took to respond to the warning. The warning was the only time that Short flagged a security concern during his time as Pence's top aide. Understand what that means, okay? In the entire time that as vice president, Mike Pence had Secret Service protection, there was never a specific threat flag to Secret Service by the Pence entourage or team. At the very end of the Trump-Pence regime, one such threat was communicated to Secret Service. And the reason for that threat was Donald Trump. The only threat that Pence's staff had to communicate to Secret Service during the entire time Mike Pence was vice president was one precipitated by and caused by his own president that Pence served under. Think about that. CNN had a report on this. Listen.
It also in our politics lead new details today about what the Secret Service was told ahead of the January 6th insurrection. And of course, it's mob chanting, "Hang Mike Pence. Hang Mike Pence." According to the New York Times' Maggie Haberman, the vice president's chief of staff, Mark Short, warned Pence's lead Secret Service agent on January 5th that Donald Trump could turn against the vice president publicly and there could be a security risk to the vice president.
Now, also relevant is if they knew on January 5th, it's very clear that what took place on the 6th was at least expected and predicted by way more people than they've admitted.
Because of it, let's get it from the horse's mouth. New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman, who has uncovered this for her upcoming book, Confidence Man, which comes out in October. Maggie, just to take a step back here, I mean, the idea that the vice president's chief of staff told the U.S. Secret Service that the president was going to be responsible for a potential security risk to the vice president, I mean, that's quite something.
It's remarkable, Jake, and it's really not a story about the Secret Service. This is a story about the enormous concern that existed about the growing pressure that Donald Trump was putting on his vice president, this extraordinary dynamic where he was, you know, becoming increasingly aggressive in his commentary about a number of officials, but as he was trying to force Pence to essentially throw the Electoral College Trump's way, or at least back to states, on January 6th, and the fact that people around Pence recognized that there was a potential safety risk because of this, because the former president has this, you know, mob of very ardent supporters who follow what he says. Now, do I think that
now they, of course, were chanting "Hang Mike Pence" at a period of time on January 6, 2021. These are exactly the types of stories that we said when Trump left. It's going to take potentially years to learn about all of these things, to some degree, because journalists are holding it for their books. And we've already commented on that, so I won't comment on it again. The one threat that had to be brought to Pence's Secret Service detail originated from President Trump. Let that sink in. Send me your thoughts. Find me on Twitter at @dpacman. Well, we've finally gotten the results. Mehmet Oz, the television doctor running in the Republican primary in Pennsylvania, has won that Republican primary and will face the Democratic primary winner, John Fetterman. Dave McCormick, the candidate with whom Oz was in a virtual tie, has conceded. NPR can now report Dr. Oz wins the Senate primary in Pennsylvania after McCormick concedes. Republican Dave McCormick conceded Friday to celebrity Dr. Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania's Senate primary as the state conducted a recount of the May 17 election. According to the AP, Oz led McCormick by 972 votes. Final results were expected early next week. In remarks to supporters on Friday, McCormick said he could not make up the deficit in the recount. "Today, I called Mehmet Oz to congratulate him on his victory," said McCormick. "And I told him what I always told you. I will do my part to try to unite Republicans and Pennsylvanians behind his candidacy, behind his nomination for Senate." Of course, Oz was endorsed by Trump. Oz tweeted, "I received a gracious phone call from David McCormick and am tremendously grateful for his pledge of support in the fall election. We share the goal of a brighter future for Pennsylvania and America." Also relevant, and as a reminder, we've covered this, Fetterman is recovering from a stroke he suffered days before the primary, needed to undergo a pacemaker implant procedure, has since not returned to the campaign trail and has only done video appearances since. David Brody from Real America's Voice, he tweeted as a result of this concession by Dave McCormick, "All hail the all-powerful Trump." Not sure I would be going with the "Hail Trump" stuff myself. Last time I saw "Hail Trump," it was Richard Spencer at a white nationalist meeting doing the Hitler salute and saying Hail Trump, with people in the crowd doing the same thing. In terms of the eventual general election race, there's really no good polling yet in terms of Oz versus Fetterman. Pennsylvania Senate, Oz versus Fetterman on Real Clear Politics. They have it merely as a toss-up right now. And in 2016, the Republican Pat Toomey won by 1.6. In 2010, the Republican Pat Toomey won by 2. This is an open seat now, an open seat. And we are going to be very strongly supporting John Fetterman. Now, this is an opportunity to have a very real conversation about the concentration of resources. And we dealt with this a little bit last week on the Friday mailbag. There are endless races in which any of us could invest time and or money. Now, we want to, you never count anybody out. You want to support good candidates. But we also sometimes have to make hard choices when there are limited resources. And I'm just going to give you an example, and I'm not telling you what to do, but this is a real question. Marcus Flowers is the challenger to Marjorie Taylor Greene in the Georgia, I believe it's the 14th district that Greene is running in. That's an outrageously red district. Statistically, it's very unlikely that Marcus Flowers has a shot. But you could invest time and money in that race as a progressive. You also have Fetterman v. Oz in Pennsylvania. That race could quite literally decide who controls the Senate starting in January of 2023. So I never say count anyone out. I never say don't work on races that are important to you. But at a certain point, we also have to consider that with limited resources, which race is most likely to make a difference? An almost certainly unwinnable race against Marjorie Taylor Greene in the Georgia 14th, or the Fetterman versus Oz race in the Pennsylvania Senate? Well, I think that the facts tell us it's almost certainly the latter. So just something to keep in mind as we go forward here. Peter Navarro has been indicted by a federal grand jury on criminal contempt of Congress charges for his refusal to cooperate in the January 6th investigation. Navarro lost it, and Trump lost it as a result. Now, as a reminder, Peter Navarro was an economic advisor to Trump, completely unhinged, complete 2020 big lie conspiracy guy. He was called in by the January 6th committee, refused to testify, and he is being held in criminal contempt. He was arrested. He was cuffed. He was booked. Now, Jamie Raskin told us they were going to try to do this. When I interviewed Congressman Jamie Raskin last week, who's on that committee, he said, we are attempting to hold in contempt the people who have refused to testify. He didn't mention Peter Navarro by name. And now here is Peter Navarro flipping out at how he was treated.
Instead of coming to my door where I live, which, by the way, is right next to the FBI, instead of calling me and say, hey, we need you down at court, we've got a warrant for you, I would have gladly come. What did they do? They intercepted me getting on the plane. And then they put me in handcuffs.
Right.
They bring me here. They put me in leg irons. They stick me in a cell. By the way, just historical note, I was in John Hinckley's cell. They
wow.
seem to think that that was like an important
big time.
Historical note. Okay. That's punitive. That what they did to me today violated the Constitution.
So he doesn't like it, and he's very, very upset. The January 6th committee Twitter published a message about this saying, quote, while today's indictment of Peter Navarro was the correct decision by the Justice Department, we find the decision to reward Mark Meadows and Dan Scavino for their continued attack on the rule of law puzzling. They have also refused to show up and have now, as of now, not yet been arrested. Now, Trump lost it on his platform, Truth Social.
Truth Central.
Donald Trump publishing a message saying, wow, Peter Navarro, our brilliant Harvard-educated White House trade official. By the way, the Harvard thing, when they want to attack people who went to Harvard, they go liberal, indoctrinating, wokester Harvard. Well, Harvard's bad. But then when they want to say, hey, why would they arrest one of our guys and treat him like this? They go, he went to Harvard after all, and you're still treating him like this. Story for a different day. Wow, Peter Navarro, our brilliant Harvard-educated White House trade official, who was by far the toughest advocate for tariffs, taxes, and powerful regulations on China, was just handcuffed, shackled, and put into prison because he didn't obey the orders of the Unselect Committee of Political Thugs, many of whom were involved with impeachment hoax number one, impeachment hoax number two, the Mueller report scam, and of course, the now fully debunked Russia con. They've gone crazy. So Trump losing it, everybody losing it. Listen, you got to show up. That's it. You've got to show up. They were told we will hold you in contempt. They are doing it at least to some people. And we will see what happens next as far as Peter Navarro is concerned. But what Jamie Raskin told us they were going to do, they're doing. And every single one of these people needs to be held accountable. Hopefully this is the start of that. Hey, this is a pretty big deal. Former Attorney General Eric Holder is now predicting that Donald Trump and his top administration officials will be indicted, Newsweek writes, former Attorney General Eric Holder predicted Friday that Trump, as well as other top officials from the former president's administration, will be indicted by the U.S. government over the events of January 6, 2021 and their efforts to change the 2020 results. In early May, Holder told CBS News he believed Trump's actions related to January 6 merit an indictment. Hundreds of Trump supporters attacked the U.S. Capitol that day after the then president told them to walk to the federal legislative building and fight like hell to save their country. Those directions came after Trump claimed for months that Biden's victory was fraudulent while pressuring officials across the country to overturn the win. On Friday, in an interview on HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Holder reiterated his view that Trump should face indictment. Let's take a look at this video of Eric Holder explaining this here to Bill Maher on his show Friday.
If you were still the attorney general about Trump and January 6th.
Well, I'll tell you, if you'd asked me that question about a year or so ago, I would have said I would have been awfully concerned about the divisive nature of bringing a case against a former president. But now, because of what we know, what great journalists have done, the leaks that have come from the January 6th committee, if you show me that Donald Trump was involved in the efforts to, in essence, foment a coup, and you can show the requisite intent, he has to be indicted.
And what would that entail after you indict him?
After you indict him, well, he would then, you know, you take him to trial just like anybody else. I think, you know, you can look at what Merrick Garland is going to do. I think my first analysis would be what's going to happen to him in Georgia.
Right.
You've got him on tape saying, you know, find me 11,780 votes. That True. One is close to a layup, it seems to me.
Right. I've always said the same thing about that one. Why don't they just go after that one moment? It's on tape. You have the smoking gun. He's saying, I remember when Rod Blagojevich
right.
was on tape, basically.
That didn't work out too well for him.
No, I know, but it was pretty blatant, but it wasn't as bad as find me 11,000 votes.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think, as I said, I think that's close to a layup. The DA down there is going to be calling witnesses, I understand, before a special grand jury. But the interesting thing there is that can also be a specification and a federal charge that could be brought in Washington, D.C. when you're charging him with conspiracy to defraud and conspiracy to obstruct. What happened in Georgia can actually be part of a federal case as well. So I think, you know, I was a federal prosecutor doing political corruption cases when I first came to the Justice Department for 12 years, and you get a feel for these things after a while. I get the feeling that I can see where this one is going, and a lot of high-level people in the Trump administration, I suspect the president himself, people at the Justice Department are all going to find themselves on a little document that says the United States versus fill in the blank.
So there is the prediction, and the hope would be that the Department of Justice will view the upcoming January 6th hearings, which start later this week, as a way to say, well, now we see it all in detail. And while the main purpose of the January 6th committee is not criminal investigation, if they uncover, we've talked about this before, if they uncover criminal activity, they refer to the Justice Department to look at it. And what Eric Holder is saying is how could they come to any other conclusion? Now, there are some who will say the hearings are sort of embarrassing enough that you don't need to indict. That's like the prototypical Susan Collins thing. Republican Senator Susan Collins loves to say, well, I was very disappointed that they incited the riotous insurrection, but the hearings were embarrassing enough to them, and that's enough punishment. We don't need to make this a political show trial. I'm sure they would never do it again. They've learned their lesson. That's the Susan Collins approach. You'll probably hear that from some in the coming weeks after we see what the January 6th committee has, which will be fascinating to see. We'll have these clips on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. We've just learned that the upcoming January 6th Trump riot committee hearings, which start Thursday night in prime time, will reportedly include video of testimony from Donald Trump's daughter, Ivanka Trump, and of testimony from Donald Trump's son-in-law, Ivanka's husband, Jared Kushner, both key players in the Trump administration. Now, this may not achieve anything, but it should serve to shed some serious light on what took place. We're going to look at the new report about this. Remember that Jamie Raskin last week told us we are bringing the heat. We are going to be exposing some serious things during these committee hearings. And then there's a question of who will be watching, but we'll talk about that in a moment. Huffington Post report, January 6th panel to reportedly air Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner videotapes. The House Select Committee investigating last year's insurrection is gearing up for its national debut of hearings that will include videotaped interviews with Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner, per The Washington Post. On Thursday, Select Committee Chair Benny Thompson and Vice Chair Liz Cheney will launch the series of televised hearings featuring both live witnesses and taped interviews, including several White House figures. Both Trump and Kushner served as senior advisors in Donald Trump's White House during the insurrection last year. Their interviews have been described to the Post as gripping. I think we don't have any idea how insane these hearings are going to be yet. The committee will attempt to place the violence at the Capitol on January 6th in a broader context of a wide-ranging scheme to overturn a legitimate presidential election, with Trump's involvement serving as the through line. Cassidy Hutchinson, a top aide to the former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, is expected to play a key role. She's already reportedly provided the committee with extensive information about Meadows' activities aimed at overturning the election. The final hearing will focus mainly on Trump, what he did and what he said before and on January 6th. Any remaining bombshells will be revealed by then. This is a very, very big deal. Now, will anybody be watching these hearings? I don't know. You know, if a tenth of the adult population were to watch it live, I'd be surprised. I'm not particularly optimistic right now that this is going to garner the large mainstream audience. I think in our world, this is going to be huge for people who follow shows like ours. And I want this to break through into the mainstream. I wish we didn't have circumstances where lots of people are fine either having no idea what happens at such a hearing or being told by Fox News the next day what took place, because we can guess that the story that the mainstream media will tell will be at best incomplete, and the story that right-wing weaponized media like Fox News, Newsmax, and OAN will tell will be actively deceptive. It will likely get a lot of media coverage, but the question is, how much interest will there be from Americans in the hearings themselves, the primary sources, as I like to call them? And unfortunately, we have this status quo in the United States, where you've got a lot of casually right-wing, disinterested Americans who aren't interested in watching something for hours, but are very happy to be told the next morning on Fox and Friends by Pete Hegseth or Ainsley Earhart what they should believe about what took place. And you can expect that they are going to say, because they're already sort of saying it, these hearings are a distraction. Well, from what? The hearings are a distraction from the real stories. Biden inflation, Biden gas prices, Biden formula shortage, the Biden failure in Ukraine, the audit going on in whatever state. There's even still an audit going on. And so at the end of the day, the core question we care about is what might come from the hearings. The hope would be just obvious, overwhelming evidence of criminality that the Justice Department can't ignore. The dream scenario would be what is presented in prime time for everybody who wants to see it to see is so undeniably criminal in what it exposes, that the DOJ has to take it up. That's the dream. And that's what we talked about earlier in the context of former Attorney General Eric Holder saying that's what he expects. Not everybody is expecting that, but that's what Eric Holder expects. This is not particularly good news for Donald Trump. Ron DeSantis has again defeated Donald Trump in another one of these 2024 Republican straw polls. Now, the straw poll is a little different than the normal polls that we talk about when we talk about presidential elections. So let me explain to you what's going on. Newsweek reporting, Trump loses to DeSantis in 2024 straw poll at conservative summit again. Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis was favored for a second year over former President Donald Trump to be the Republican Party's 2024 presidential nominee at a conservative conference. This was held in Colorado. It's the Western Conservative Summit. They always do these straw polls. Now, if we look at the results, you will see that this is a picture of the screen at the event. These numbers don't add up to 100. So Ron DeSantis coming in first at 71% and Donald Trump coming in second at just under 68%. Then you've got Ted Cruz, Ben Carson, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Tim Scott, Mike Pompeo, Donald Trump Jr., Nikki Haley, and Mike Pence. Why don't they add up to 100? Voters are allowed to make more than one choice. This is what's called an approval poll. And I think there's even a, Newsweek has a paragraph about this. Because voters were allowed to make more than one choice through the approval voting method, the percentages add up to more than 100%. This minimizes spoilers and sabotage and gives viability and visibility to minor candidates. So the idea here is you just check off who would you approve of being the nominee. And more people approve of DeSantis being the Republican nominee than Trump, but not by much. Now, what's very interesting to follow about this is that Trump and DeSantis are already feuding for the most part. Every once in a while, they'll say something polite about the other. But this all started when Ron DeSantis refused to rule out that he'd run against Trump in 2024. Trump has no problem, I guess, with DeSantis saying, if Trump didn't run, I would consider running. I would bow down at the altar of Trump and let Trump have it if Trump wants it. If Trump doesn't want it, I'd consider it. But DeSantis didn't rule out running against Trump. He didn't say, I'm planning to do it, but he didn't rule it out. This, we had reports of months ago, which we talked about in some detail, sent Trump for a tailspin. Trump now hates DeSantis, and DeSantis has also started to distance from Trump. DeSantis has started saying, I shouldn't have listened to Trump so much early on in the pandemic. I don't remember him listening very much to Trump, to be honest, but that's what DeSantis has said. And Trump has been saying, DeSantis benefited from my help early in the pandemic, and they're no longer getting along with each other. So we're going to follow these numbers very closely. But maybe the most interesting thing about all of this is that we are now seeing the closest numbers we have ever seen in the betting markets for who will be the Republican nominee. If you go to predictit.org, what these numbers show us are how much money do you need to bet to win a dollar? So basically, the more you need to bet to win a dollar, the more likely that outcome is, because that's how odds work. These numbers are as close as they've ever been. Donald Trump is now at 38 cents and Ron DeSantis is now at 34 cents. This is the closest they've ever been. They at one point they were much further apart. And in fact, if you look at the Ron DeSantis numbers here, if I can pull them up. Oh, I guess I have to be logged in order to do that. Here we go. So if you look here at Trump and DeSantis, this is not even close enough. Here we go. So as you can see, the numbers have gotten closer and closer. Early in March, you had Trump 39 and DeSantis 27, separated by 12. And as you can see, mostly as a result of DeSantis consolidating support from other candidates, without Trump really declining much, they are now almost tied. And remember, this isn't who would you vote for. This is who do you believe will be the nominee. We have never seen it this close. In terms of us on the left, what do we care about? We care about whatever scenario gets us to something other than Trump or Pence as president in 2024. I don't really care who the nominee is as long as they end up losing. Now, of course, at a certain point, we would ask the question, which nominee is more likely to lose? Is it Trump or is it Pence? I don't know the answer yet. We don't have great polling on that yet, although I expect it to start soon and definitely after the midterms. If Trump would be easier to beat, I'd rather it be Trump. If DeSantis would be easier to beat, I'd rather it be DeSantis. The X factor is DeSantis is less incompetent than Trump, and that probably makes him more dangerous because he might be better able to get things done. This is a conversation we will have time for, but those are the latest numbers. DeSantis looking increasingly strong against Trump. I want to hear from you. Leave a comment, send an email, send a tweet. Who would you rather the Democratic nominee run against? Would you rather run against Trump or would you rather run against DeSantis? Let me know. We'll do a follow up. All right, let's check out a sort of good old fashioned conspiracy theory. This one combines the globalist. You know how Alex Jones always uses that term? Globalist, internationalist, Trotskyite socialists, unlike Obama, Trudeau, Macron, and the rest of these Zio beasts. Yeah, that's a recording of me doing Alex Jones. Okay, so One America News OAN anchor Allison Steinberg did a globalist rant about globalists tracking her through her apartment's, I guess it's a Nest thermostat with its energy saving settings. This is, yeah, let's just take a look at this. And this is the level of delusion that now is being that we're now seeing it presented in a serious manner.
All right. So I think it's pretty obvious. We can all agree the whole goal with these globalists is to track us and trace us and monitor every single thing that we do in our everyday lives. In fact, this device that you're probably watching me from, that you're holding in your hand, is doing just that right now. And we know this. This is not new news.
OK.
However, I've just discovered another layer of this that is, what I believe, taking it a step way too far. So I just moved into this new place, and this Nest device came automatically installed. With the apartment. It's the thermostat control, basically. So it's really cold in here because there's cement floors, and I was constantly having to turn the heat up. Now, I realized it would get cold after I turn the heat up.
This is just the best. I hope you guys see where this is going.
On multiple occasions. So I started thinking, why is this happening? Now get this, I'm gonna show you the interface of this and you're not gonna believe it. Okay, so I'm having to turn it up again because it went down to 70 and I wanted it at 73. So it's having to heat up again.
Oh, this is, so my old place, when I lived in Boston, my old place had these. And when my tenants came in, the same thing happened. And they didn't ascribe it to the globalist. They ascribed it to the how the technology works. And I'll tell you how you fix this. This is the best.
And because it keeps turning itself back down. And I was wondering, why the f*** is this happening? Well, I decided to go to settings.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found this Home Away Assist. Then it says automatically use eco temperatures when no one's home. So that means this thing can track whether or not I'm in my f***ing house.
Yeah. Now, Nest thermostats, they have a proximity sensor. So like when you walk by it, it turns on so you don't have to press it. Like if you want to just see what the temperature is, you walk by and it senses you walk by and it flips on and you go, oh, it's 72. So you don't have to click it or press it. And it uses that to figure out whether you're likely home or not.
So this thing was turning itself off when I wasn't home and then would automatically start reheating when it sensed I was back inside.
It must be the globalist.
And if that's not creepy enough, they also somehow now have my email address because they keep harassing me in my inbox to sign up for their stupid app. So it can connect to my phone so
their stupid app
can track me even further. This is absolute madness. If you have a Nest, turn off all these settings because it's taking it way too far.
Yeah, you can turn off all of these settings. I mean, listen, at one point I started to suspect that the milk frother attachment on my espresso machine had a camera in it and an RFID chip, because every time I made an espresso, I would get an email offering me a coffee-based vaccine. It was crazy. But then I realized, no, I'm wrong. I'm an idiot. Could she really believe this? All of these thermostats have these functions. The thermostats, when I left my place in Boston and tenants came in, I didn't use almost any of these things because I had turned them off. I like to control everything manually. You know, I'm like, there's just types. Some people are like, set it to automatic and let it do it thing. In the car with climate control, I don't want to control the fan speed. And I just go, I want 72 auto. You figure out how to get us to auto, how to 72. At home, I'm sort of more aware of like, okay, when am I usually going to bed and I want it cool or whatever. So I turn all of this stuff off. I don't want the temperature changing when I'm in and out. I already am using more like eco-friendly temperatures during the day when I'm out at work, you know, all these different things. So when my tenants turned it on, they were like, hey, it's not doing anything. And I said, well, you've got to let it learn. I never used that. So you've got to let it learn your schedule. And it's a smart thermostat. You just turn it off. There's no globalish. Yeah. It's just the way the technology is designed. And it's hard for me to know for sure whether what you just saw is serious. I just don't know. It's very sick if it is, but maybe it's just trolling. That's Allison Steinberg from One America News Network. You can just turn all that stuff off. George Soros won't have any say. Klaus Schwab, right? Because remember, I know this is Allison Steinberg, so she may be Jewish herself. I've never met anyone named Steinberg who's not Jewish, but globalist usually is talking about rich Jewish men who want to control everything, including the fan speed, apparently, now on your AC. Very wild stuff. And my question to you is simply, do you think she's for real, or do you think she's just playing this up for her audience? Last week, I told you about two Republicans who said, it's too much with the shootings. We need gun control. I'm open to an assault weapons ban. That was Adam Kinzinger, Republican congressman who's outgoing, and New York's Chris Jacobs. One of those two Republicans has now been so shunned by the Republican Party that has withdrawn their support for him that he now has announced he's not going to be running for re-election. That's it. You're off script and you're gone. So reminder, last week I did a story called Multiple Republicans Change Their Minds, Open to Banning Assault Rifles. And they weren't like huge lefty declarations. It was just, hey, you know, I've opposed these types of bans in the past, but we sort of have to do something because this isn't good. And one of those Republicans was Chris Jacobs from New York. He is now done. Here's a report from The Hill. New York Republican won't run for second term after backing gun control. Representative Chris Jacobs on Friday announced he will not run for a second term in the House 1 week after breaking from his party and announcing his support for an assault weapons ban. Jacobs, who represents suburbs of Buffalo, said, "Today I'm announcing I will not run for the 23rd Congressional District. I will finish out my time as a member of Congress to the end of this year." Jacobs was endorsed by the NRA in 2020. Announced he would support a bill to ban assault-style rifles if it came to the floor. Adam Kinzinger, who's retiring, said the same thing. Jacobs also backed raising the required age for specific gun sales to 21 years old. I'd say 25, but 21-something. Enacting a federal limit on gun magazine capacities. I agree. And prohibiting the sale of body armor to the public. The New York Republican told the Buffalo News in an interview that he reconsidered his point of view toward guns after the shootings in Buffalo and Uvalde, Texas. Makes sense. Jacobs on Friday said every Republican elected official who endorsed him in his reelection bid has withdrawn their support since he backed gun control measures last week. He also said he lost the backing of Republican committees and the Republican and conservative parties in New York State. The congressman said he ultimately decided to back out of the race to avoid an incredibly divisive election. Despite the backlash, I truly believe I could win, but it would be incredibly divisive for the party and the people of the 23rd district, many of whom I have not ever represented. This is because the redistricting would move him from the 27th to the 23rd district, saying he doesn't want a campaign filled with half-truths and lies. So look at that. He merely entertains an assault weapons ban, and he is excommunicated by the party and is driven out of office. Now, I know some people will say, but David, he chose to quit. Okay, but the message here is, if you aren't on message, we all pull our support. We endorse your opponent. You're on your own. There's no gray area on this issue. You're either on script or you were off script. It's a form of, you guys know what it is, right? It's a form of cancel culture. You say one wrong thing and you're out. And any sort of moderation puts you in a precarious position in today's Republican Party. It's not a big tent party there. I mean, think of it. Liz Cheney, all she said was Trump genuinely lost. Biden genuinely won. Trump did have a role in inciting the insurrection. She's on a list. She gets primaried. Trump shows up and campaigns for her opponent. So this is how they work. Don't let them trick you into believing that the cancel culture is on the left. They will cancel you if you go off script right away. And this is evidence of it. So the two, think of it, the two Republicans who have said, hey, you know what? This was my view before, but here's my view now. Kinzinger is saying it with the safety of knowing he's retiring anyway. And Jacobs now is saying, whoa, this got crazy. I'm bailing. Sad commentary on the state of the Republican Party. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here's a caller commenting on Fox News host Laura Ingraham last week, linking cannabis to mass shootings. Take a listen to this.
Hey, David. Susan from Chicago commenting on Laura Ingraham and her ridiculous marijuana conclusions.
Yep.
I can assure you that people who smoke marijuana are not out committing crimes. We are at home eating frozen cookie dough in our pajamas. So keep that in mind. And have a nice day.
Bye. Yeah. And of course, the stereotype of the cannabis user is relaxed, low key, not out there committing violent crimes. And generally speaking, that's accurate. There are some studies we've talked about which can link cannabis to people kind of predisposed to aggressive behavior. In some of them, there have been some studies that say cannabis can sort of enliven that tendency, but no evidence whatsoever of a causal relationship between cannabis and violent crime. That's what the facts and the best studies we have tell us as of right now. I don't even know that Laura Ingraham really believes it, but it's certainly something. I mean, listen, they'll latch on to anything. For the first few days after the Texas shooting, it was doors, too many doors, open doors, unlocked doors. Then it shifted to other things. Well, it's mental illness. So, but you guys always vote against funding for mental illness. Well, so it's probably some other thing. Maybe now it's cannabis. Cannabis psychosis is another thing they're pointing to. Their only goal is don't talk about guns. That's the one piece we can't talk about. Anything else, they'll blow smoke up your, you know, wherever, in your nostrils. But the gun piece, you can't talk about. We'll see what happens over the next week with this forthcoming vote in the House on banning assault weapons. Can Democrats find 10 Republicans in the Senate to get to 60? And would they have the votes of all 50 Democrats is also a fair question to pass an assault weapons ban. I think by Friday, we'll have a much better idea. We have a fantastic bonus show for you today. Among other stories, we will talk about the Supreme Court deciding to allow states to use illegally gerrymandered Republican districting maps in the 2022 midterm elections. What? Why? We will talk about that and much more on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com and remember that you can use the coupon code BIGVOTING22.
Surrounded by water, big water.
Not big water. Just big voting, BIGVOTING22, to get a discount off of a membership at joinpacman.com.
and chase the sun.
Thank you.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The vote in favor of having confidence in Boris Johnson as leader was 211 votes, and the vote against was 148 votes. And therefore, I can announce that the Parliamentary Party does have confidence. Yeah.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson survives a no-confidence vote. Barely, we'll get the latest. Then we go to Uvalde, Texas, as funerals continue for the 19 fourth graders and two teachers shot dead 2 weeks ago. We'll speak with Texas State Senator Roland Gutierrez.
No community should have to go through what the people in Uvalde had to deal with. Families are shattered. We need change in Texas. We need change in the United States. It's my hope that by keeping up this pressure, Greg Abbott will do the right thing. Change the laws so that no family in Texas will have to deal with this again.
As calls for investigations grow, we'll also look at threats to the press in Uvalde, like journalists trying to cover the funerals being blocked by bikers called in by the police. We'll speak to Nora Lopez, executive editor of the San Antonio Express News, president of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. Plus, we talk to investigative journalist Carrie Blakinger about her new memoir out today, Corrections in Ink, describing her journey from addiction to prison to the newsroom.
I wrote this book to help humanize prisoners, to help humanize people that were in the situation I was in, and to also show people that second chances are possible, and to show what the barriers are to people actually realizing those second chances.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ukraine's government says more than 40,000 civilians have been killed or wounded in fighting since Russia invaded in late February, with some 3 million Ukrainians now living under Russian occupation. On Monday, President Volodymyr Zelensky said Ukrainian forces are continuing to fight pitched battles in the eastern city of Severodonetsk, but that his troops are outnumbered and losing ground. Meanwhile, bombs and shells continue to rain down on rural communities near the front lines. One person was killed, another injured in the town of Druzhkivka, where residents woke Sunday to the sound of explosions and shattering glass.
You can see for yourself what happened. What else can I say? I have been left homeless in my old age.
The United Nations is demanding an independent investigation into charges of rape and sexual assault committed by Russian soldiers in Ukraine. Pramila Patton, the UN Special Representative on Sexual Violence and Conflict, told the UN Security Council Monday about multiple shocking reports ranging from gang rape to coercion, where loved ones are forced to watch an act of sexual violence committed against a partner or a child. European Council President Charles Michel condemned the findings.
We hear reports of Russian forces wielding sexual violence as a weapon of war. Sexual violence is a war crime, a crime against humanity, a tactic of torture, terror, and repression. Shameful acts in a shameful war.
The European Council president also said Russia was solely responsible for triggering a global food crisis by invading Ukraine. The accusations prompted Russia's ambassador to the UN to storm out of the UN Security Council meeting in protest. Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador has confirmed he will not attend the Summit of the Americas after the Biden administration excluded